Back together again, you and I chatting it up Thursday style, August 21st, 2025 on Connecticut Today, where I started the show by breaking down numbers from a new poll on the 2026 Connecticut Republican gubernatorial nomination race. Sacred Heart University political science professor and scholar in residence, Dr. Gary Rose, offered his thoughts on that same poll. We were joined by CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum to discuss a major court decision tossing out a huge monetary fine against President Trump. And National Taxpayers Union Foundation VP of Research Damian Brady stopped by to talk about whether taxpayers should ever stop paying for the perks given to former presidents of the U.S. So if you're a political junkie, you can, mark down this day's Thursday, August the 21st, 2025. If you're a Connecticut political junkie of sorts, big day today, because today is the day. When you look at what has happened earlier today, today is the day, really, I think, where the internal battle in the Connecticut Republican Party begins. And it's a battle that will be fought. It's a battle that will be yelled and screamed about at Republican town committee meetings all throughout the state. It's a battle that will be also fought on social media and on talk shows like this, with guests coming on and people calling in and texting in and giving us their thoughts as to who is going to be and who should be. And those are two different things. Who's going to be the 2026 Republican nominee for governor in this state, and who should be the 2026 Republican nominee for governor in this state. New poll out there, put out there by the campaign of soon-to-be-departing multi-term mayor Republican Aaron Stewart in New Britain. Now, this is being noted as an internal poll, and the reason you tell people polls are internal is because there are ways, and I'm not accusing the campaigns of anybody of doing this, Aaron Stewart, Jen Tooker, Ryan Fazio, but sometimes you sit down with a pollster, sometimes, and this is done by all candidates on all sides, and you figure out with that pollster, especially internally, how to phrase questions, how to list candidates, how to come up with the most accurate poll, while at the same time coming up with a poll that looks good for you, especially if you're paying pollsters. Pollsters ain't cheap. A lot of people say, well, you know, they never call that. That's the famous one. Well, they never call me. Yeah, well, chances are you'll never get called for a poll in a state of 3.4 million people or in a country of 344 million, you're never going to get called for a poll. Just statistically, you won't. Some of them will, but there is a poll here, and the poll says it's a poll for the Stewart campaign, done for the Stewart campaign, asking who should be the Republican nominee to run against, more than likely, Ned Lamont, if he's the Democratic nominee. God help us if he's not. Hold on to your wallets if Ned Lamont isn't the Democratic nominee. Believe me when I say that. Aaron Stewart in the poll getting 42% in a hypothetical Republican primary for governor. Aaron Stewart at 42%. Ryan Fazio at 13%. Other candidates, I would assume, including Jen Tooker at 10%. And the undecided is about one-third of the Republican field, or Republican voters, I should say, at 35%. So Aaron Stewart at 42%, Ryan Fazio at 13%, others at 10%, and undecided, says this poll for the Stewart campaign, at 35%. But this is where the rubber is going to start meeting the road. Now, it is no surprise that you're getting the kinds of statements that you're likely to on a situation like this, where one side says, hey, look how good this poll is for us, And the other side, or another side there, is saying, well, of course it's going to be, of course it's going to be good. Morgan Wilson, a senior political advisor to Mayor Aaron Stewart, this quote here out of the Hartford Current, saying, quote, with a clear fundraising edge and decisive poll numbers, Mayor Stewart is the only viable GOP potential candidate. Quote, while others put out boilerplate announcement videos echoing the talking points of Hartford insiders, shot at Ryan Fazio there, Mayor Stewart has been traveling the state listening to real voters. If she decides to run, it'll be to represent working families across the state with a new generation of proven leadership for Connecticut that no one else can offer. That's pretty good. I spent a couple of campaigns writing stuff like that. I did. Staying up at night saying, hey, maybe I should move this word there. No, but that's pretty good. Now, Morgan Wilson works for a firm called On Message Incorporated. That's a political consulting firm that conducts polling, creates advertising, and advises candidates. The firm was co-founded by Brad Todd, who's often on CNN. By the way, this was a poll, we should tell you, of 400 likely Republican primary voters, all right? So you're going to sit here and say, well, how many of these people in Connecticut, Paul, did they actually really talk to? So they say it's 400 likely voters. Now, what did the Fazio campaign say? This is a pretty good comeback from Ryan Fazio's campaign. Quote, Ryan Fazio has been running for governor for 7 days, while his opponent has been running for governor for 7 years. Ooh, little shot across the bow there. Yeah, said Jim Conroy, a Fazio spokesman. Clearly, Ryan's competition is sensing his momentum as just 1 week into his candidate. They are shopping disingenuous push polling. Ah, and there's the shot, folks. Shot across the bow from the Stewart campaign to Ryan Fazio, and a shot across the bow from the Fazio campaign to Aaron Stewart. Let the games begin. We'll get into this a little bit more momentarily. But here's what I ask you as we're up and underway on this Thursday, the 21st of October, 2025. Is that what it is? Yeah, 2025. It's all a blur. Who would you pick to be the 2026 Republican gubernatorial candidate? Who would that be? Right now, the three main candidates in there, Ryan Fazio, Aaron Stewart, or Jen Tooker from Westport. So what do you think? We have two major Fairfield County-centered candidates, and one the currently serving but soon to be outgoing mayor of New Britain. What are your thoughts? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And do you think the GOP here in Connecticut, as limited as it is in some spots with numbers, but I'm sure there are some non-affiliated voters or unaffiliated with either party who may vote for Ryan or Jen or Aaron Stewart. But do you want a brawl for this? Do you want this to be a knockdown, drawn-out, steel cage match here? Or do you think GOP unity, if the Republicans are able to ever get back to the upper echelons of government here in this state, is that important? Or do you want just a bar fight? Do you want a good old-fashioned bar fight where chairs are flying and bottles are breaking? And let's face it, as much as there are some great Republican legislators in this state, as much as there are some great Republican, leaders in thought in this state, the party on an electoral level in this state, from the governor's office down to and through the constitutional offices and even the federal offices, the state GOP is not dead, but boy, it's on life support. And I say this as a registered Republican, but again, look how many cycles it's been since you had a Republican governor and or any Republican elected state constitutional offices or officers, meaning the state treasurer, the secretary of the state, the state attorney general, the state comptroller, whatever, let alone the governor's office, the governor's seat, and that of the lieutenant governor. And look, the GOP, the last several cycles, is a big, fat oafer. Now, can Jen Tooker change that? Can Ryan Fazio change that? Can Aaron Stewart change that? It's a tall order. You've got a guy here, Ned Lamont, who, although a lot of people, you know, including a lot of people, call and bitch and moan and whine about him on this show, guy has got a pretty good, anywhere from the low to mid-50s to the low 60s, depending upon the poll you look at, of an approval level. But look, with all due respect, Bob Stefanowski, 0 for 2. Tom Foley, 0 for 2. Another 0 for from Linda McMahon. Another 0 for from Leora Levy. So the question begs. Now the brawl has started. And I don't mean it's going to be a nasty draw nothing, but maybe it should be. Looks like Aaron Stewart's going to run. She hasn't said officially, but she's up over the $300,000 mark. Ryan Fazio announcing all across the state about a week ago that he's running. Where he's going to get his money from, I don't know. I'm sure he has plans for that. You know, Aaron Stewart was out there running early. I know Jen Tooker has claimed that she has raised about $100,000 or something like that, looking for matching funding. But, you know, the bottom line is here, who's going to do it? And is there going to be an internal brawl or an internal knockdown dragout in the Republican Party regarding who the nominee is going to be? Now, again, this is an internal poll done by the Stewart campaign, which the Fazio campaign is proclaiming this to be a push poll. In other words, you do polling like this to get a favorable push polling does. It gets you a favorable outcome, which you can then push, a.k.a. push polling, and say, hey, look at these poll numbers. So the Stewart campaign claims that she has a 42% chunk of 400 likely Republican primary voters in the state. And that's for Connecticut, for a state the size of Connecticut, that's a pretty good chunk. 400 to poll. With a 4.9% margin of error, meaning that her vote total could be as high as 47%, or it could be as low as 37%. Ryan Fazio with 13%, and other candidates with 10%, undecided 35%. So if you are one, let's do it this way. If you are a likely Republican voter, who would you vote for? Who do you think? Let's assume, for the sake of assumption here, that the two candidates with the best name recognition, Ryan Fazio and Aaron Stewart, one's an official candidate, one's not. Let's say it came down to those two. Who would you pick if you're a Republican? And if you're a Democrat, who should the GOP pick? We'll start it off today with Andy. Andy, good afternoon, sir. How are you? What's on your mind? Hey.
Well, Paul, I'm as happy as an itchy pig rubbing up against the prickly bush.
Yes.
I think that this knock-em-down, drag-em-out, over-the-top, mud-slinging brawl, internal brawl with the Republicans, didn't work that well with the senatorial race to try and depose Blumenthal.
No, it didn't.
But it worked well for him because it got him reelected.
Now, my
theory is if they do the same thing, it's going to be good for Ned Lamont, which is okay with me because I like Ned.
Okay.
So I think they have to, like, get together, get united, work together, and try and win for the good of the state rather than do what they're starting out to do. I just really don't like it.
But who do you think, Andy, would fare better against Ned Lamont, Aaron Stewart or Ryan Fazio?
I like Fazio.
Yeah? Why?
I like his thought process. I like his attitude, his demeanor, his policies, his intelligence. Aaron Stewart, she's a nice lady, you know?
All right. That's it. That's what you're going to leave me with. Okay.
Well, I like Fazio. He's okay. My pick, but we'll see. But hopefully they don't get stupid like they did with Lenore Levy and Thomas.
Yeah, Andy, thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, I still can't get over that whole Leora Levy thing. I can't. I know why people did it. She had a boatload of money, and she got the Trump imprimatur, so we'll ask again. How on earth did that work out? Gentlemen, we'll have to have him on. Sacred Heart University political science professor and scholar in residence. I will never be mistaken for a scholar, but Dr. Gary Rose is. Gary, it's Paul. How are you, sir? Good to have you back.
Hey, good to hear from you, Paul. How are you?
Good, Gary. And I wanted to have you on because I saw you were quoted a couple of places this morning about this this poll, which I guess the Aaron Stewart, and she's not really officially declared, but she's still exploring and raising money. I know you were quoted as interpreting this. So what do you make of this, Gary? I'm not really surprised. She's been out there for years. She's raising money. Ryan Fazio, a relatively new guy on the scene, but well-known in some parts of the state. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Stewart is already a household name. It doesn't really surprise me, Paul, in the least, that she is so far ahead of everyone else in this poll. You know, people don't even know who Ryan Fazio is yet. He's only been really in this contest for like less than 2 weeks. And so everybody knows who Aaron Stewart is. She's been in the news a lot. She's talked about running for governor, even though she hasn't formally declared yet. Mm-hmm. People are very familiar with the fact that she's a mayor in New Britain there, and that she is a pretty popular individual among Republicans. And so, you know, it really is no surprise. This is a very early poll. We still have over a year to go. Quite frankly, as I've noted in other interviews, that I do not put a lot of stock in a poll this early. I truly don't. And this massive gap that exists between Fazio and Aaron Stewart can be quickly closed once his campaign really begins in earnest.
And Gary, do you think, and I said this earlier in my opening, I thought maybe you do this now for two reasons, because you know that Ryan Fazio will gain momentum, so I think you want to put some sand in the gears there. And as I recall, Gary, she's getting close now to having enough money to get the, whatever it is, $14, $15, $16 million to run from the election thing. So is this kind of like a dive for the goal line on that, you think, maybe?
Yeah, that's true. And Ryan's going to have to do a lot of fundraising in order to qualify for the, you know, Citizens Election Fund. Mm-hmm. And that in itself presents a hurdle. Yeah, she could obviously have a pretty substantial war chest if she's able to tap into that. Is that something that can be insurmountable? Yes, it can. There are a lot of people out there I know that I've known of who, and at least I've heard, I can't verify it completely, who think Ryan Fazio is a more vibrant and dynamic candidate and would be willing to give money to him. And so she's definitely raising a lot of money, or raising money right now to qualify. But I think, again, the money part of it, and I know that that's been announced, you know, and I think a lot of that has to do with to try to clear the field.
Yeah.
But I don't put any stock in anything this premature and this early in the campaign.
Yeah. Dr. Gary Rose, the guest from Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. And Gary, also in looking at this, it's interesting that this time around, the two major candidates, now who knows who may drop in, but the two major candidates here, Aaron Stewart and Ryan Fazio, they're not running from their admiration for President Trump. In fact, they've openly kind of embraced it. Is this a way to not upset some of the more conservative folks who may vote in a potential primary here?
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. And it is interesting, you know, Aaron Stewart for a long time was considered a very moderate Republican, who was able to work across the aisle and get Democratic votes. But now lately, it seems like she is transitioning more towards, you know, being a supporter of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And Fazio has been a supporter of Trump all along. And you know, what they're thinking of, I'm sure, is, an August primary in which turnout will be low, but the people who will be there at the polls will be very conservative Republicans. We have to go back to Leora Levy to demonstrate that. And so I'm sure that's what they're thinking. And, you know, in order to win that Republican primary, you have to be, these days, in Connecticut at least, you have to be a supporter of Donald Trump. You do.
Yeah. One of the other really interesting races, Gary, is this race in the first district between, you know, John Larson, 77 years old, multi-term Democrat, and Luke Bronin, a very visible guy, former mayor of Hartford, you know, younger, seemingly more vibrant. And I detect that this may be, Gary, illustrative of what the GOP went through a few years ago. Maybe now, do you think we have that changing of the guard maybe coming up here in a race that a lot of people are surprised Luke Bronin got into?
Yeah, and And Luke Bronin has raised a lot of money as well. And so, you know, as the former mayor of Hartford, he has a pretty strong record in that respect as well. And so I would say that we've got a very interesting race going on between those two. And it is true, as you say, you know, this could be a generational change taking place in that district. Although at the same time, I have to say that John Larson has a very, very strong record.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he has Pratt and Whitney on his side, very strong union support.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think we're in for a very fascinating contest going on there.
Gary, I look, everybody I've talked to on the air, like you and other pundits, and even off the air, kind of off the record, they've said, yeah, Ned Lamont's running again. He's just waiting as long as he can to kind of throw any opposition off kilter, off balance. You still think that? Is Governor Lamont going to run again?
Yeah, well, I think that was the reason why Luke decided to run for the first district. That's at least what people on the inside are saying, is he actually does know that Lamont is probably going to seek a third term. And, you know, he originally had his sights set on running for governor, if you remember. And so I think he knows something that maybe hasn't been publicized yet, and that is that the governor is probably going to seek a third term. And so what he did was then he decided to shift his his concern to winning the first district. Yeah.
Sure. Dr. Gary Rose with us. A couple more minutes here talking about all things political. Gary, the guy in the White House, still is doing what he wants to. He doesn't seem to be deterred. And he's just keeping, and I talk about this all the time on the show, he's got so many things going at one time. His ability, and even I think Chris Matthews said this the other day or somebody, to keep the Democrats to a great extent off balance here and not know how to go back at him. I mean, every day it's really something different with him. Tonight he's going to go out. I don't know whether you saw this, Gary. Trump's going out tonight on the streets of D.C. with some of these patrols.
Wow. No, now that one I didn't hear about. But you're right. It doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me. He was walking around on top of the White House the other day.
Secret Service is getting a heartburn over
it. I know. It's amazing. I mean, there is so much energy going on with this president, and I've never seen anything like it. And he has become really the epicenter of the world, practically. And so it's just amazing that he's got so many so many issues that he's working on simultaneously. And quite frankly, I haven't seen a president in my lifetime who is so engaged in so many different issues all at once. It's really remarkable what we're watching here.
Well, finally, Gary, what do you make of him and Putin and is the two, you could argue, most powerful politicians in the world? You think Putin's going to have to get something in the end to even entertaining to stop what he's doing here?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really tough one right there. What's going to come down? And I know particularly if Zelensky, the three of them meet, how that's going to shake out. But Putin is going to want to keep that territory that he's acquired already. I mean, he's got his sights set on Ukraine. Mm. And, you know, that to me is going to be really the toughest part of it, because Putin, I do not believe, is going, even if they have this security guarantee that they're talking about, and yeah. Article 5-like commitments, whatever that exactly means, Putin is not going to want to, relinquish the eastern part of the state, the country that he's acquired already. So I think that's going to be the toughest part of it. And if, in fact, that happens, then Trump is not going to look good. It's going to look like he capitulated to Putin, because at that point, it's going to look as if, well, you know, he invaded a country and he's going to keep what he acquired. Yeah. So how is that really considered to be a win in the area of foreign policy?
Absolutely. Gary, thank you. Dr. Gary Rose, Sacred Heart University political science professor and scholar in residence. Gary, be good. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Take care, Paul.
Appreciate it, Dr. Gary Rose. Longtime guest of mine going back, 15, 20 years at least. Kind of a big story here. I read this morning and said, oh, this is interesting. Remember one of the myriad of cases that Donald Trump lost? This was the exaggerating his wealth case. They fined him like $500 million. And now a court says, well, that's a little much. We'll see. Joining us right now to hash all this out, CBS News legal correspondent Thane Rosenbaum. Of course, check out his website, ThaneRosenbaum.com, and his books on Amazon as well. Thane, it's Paul here. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good hearing your voice, buddy.
So this doesn't throw out the case, correct? But the judges said, what, $500 million, a little bit much? Dissect this for us.
It doesn't throw out the case. It essentially, in theory, it still says that Donald Trump committed civil fraud under the theory that he had artificially inflated the assets of the real estate portfolio to get more favorable terms on bank loans and insurance policies.
Yeah.
But that the citizens of New York City, the residents of New York State, rather, were not damaged to the tune of $500 million, $500 million. And so they took an Eighth Amendment argument of excessive fines, excessive punishment that essentially did not fit the crime. Now, remember, this was not a criminal case. This is a civil forfeiture case.
Yeah.
The problem was that they just sort of said the number is like Monopoly money. Where did you come up with this number?
Yeah.
And the reason they had that problem is because, if you remember, Paul, this was the case in which it almost looked like the victimless crime, because the victims of Donald Trump, which would have been the banks that loaned him the money on the mortgages of these large buildings, testified that they got repaid, and they got paid with interest, and they were happy with their arrangement. And if Donald Trump wanted to buy more buildings, they would lend him more money. So it raised an interesting question, like, you know, you should know it's true in Connecticut. Your attorney general is different from your local district attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
The attorney general is really there for consumer protection. It's not about criminal laws per se. It's really to protect the consumer. So the question is, in what way were the consumers of New York State damaged? And this court essentially said, well, we're not sure, but we know it's not $500 million.
Yeah, and Thane, I also remember during this whole thing, and this may be more of a kind of an inside baseball thing that actually than legal, but you tell me yes or no. I heard a lot of people, and you probably heard them too, you know, on a lot of the talk shows saying, listen, I don't love Trump anything, but, you know, this kind of happens all the time. This is how big city real estate works. All these numbers are inflated, and like you said, everybody gets paid back in the end, so there's no real, it's kind of a victimless crime. Any thoughts on that?
It's completely inside baseball.
Yeah.
You were right. Yeah, it's a very inside baseball point, because forget businesses. It's when you sell your house, whether it's in Connecticut or wherever it is, the people that come to your door, you tell them things that may not be entirely true. You go, we just put that pool in yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, we just put in a new roof. It's brand new. People do this all the time. And that's why you hire engineers to come in to take a look. Well, you know what? That's what the banks did.
Yeah.
The banks, they have lawyers and accountants. They have truckloads of lawyers and accountants. and they looked at the terms of these deals. So that's why Donald Trump's lawyers are saying, who are you protecting? Major banks that have a, you know, busload of lawyers and CPAs who check over this deal. Why are you even bringing this case at all? It's never been used in this way, which, by the way, was true. This civil forfeiture statute was never used in this way for a real good reason, because normally when you're dealing with, you know, businesses against each other, you let them negotiate in good faith.
Yeah.
The question is when the public is being deceived. And the question here was, in what way were they damaged? And so the fact that they literally threw the book at Donald Trump with the $500 million. Also, remember two things. One is that the Justice Department is now investigating Letitia James, New York Attorney General. This is not good for her, because they're saying, we think that you politicized your office. And this this result from today's ruling does not help her, because it implies that that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
That she went she recommended to the judge the highest number could possibly be used. And this is the kind of ruinous number that says, we're not trying to just send a message. We're trying to destroy your business.
Exactly. Exactly.
We really wanted, and not only your business, your sons. They remember, they were defendants too.
Yeah.
It applied to his two adult sons. So we're just going to destroy the Trump brand, period. And by the way, you're running for president, so we're going to mess you up there too. So this decision doesn't really help her, because it leaves a sort of bad taste that what she did engage in perhaps was improper. But it still raises the question, well, what happens next? Does it go back to the judge?
Yeah.
Is he going to conduct another trial on damages? Right. I don't know if that's going to happen. The judge also doesn't look good here, but the attorney general is trying to appeal this case. But guess what?
Yeah.
I think Donald Trump will appeal it too, even though this is a victory. Why? Because he's going to say, the opinions, if you read it, it looks like you guys didn't believe in the merits of this case to begin with. So why did you leave the liability?
Yeah.
Why did you just talk? If you didn't buy the whole legal theory, nor should you have, why did you just let me get us? Why does it now look like I committed civil forfeiture, when if you read your opinion, you're not sure that I did? And in fact, the judge who wrote the minority opinion gave a football reference. He said, he said to two of his other colleagues who voted with the majority, he said, I don't know what you're doing. It looks like you're calling a touchdown, but you never crossed the goal line.
Yeah.
He said, you didn't cross the goal line and you're calling, your hands are up for a touchdown. So I think Donald Trump's going to say, I'm not happy with this outcome, because this still makes it look, under the ruling, not only did I commit civil forfeiture, if I was leaving the White House, I would not be allowed to serve as a board member of a New York State corporation. This has other kinds of penalties that shouldn't apply to me if you don't believe that this was brought in good taste.
Interesting. Great stuff. Thank you. Thane Rosenbaum, CBS News. Check out his website, ThaneRosenbaum.com. Thanks, Thane. Appreciate it, my friend. You know, whenever a president leaves office, they are still very active. A lot of them get book deals. They make a lot of money. They have donations to a library foundation or whatever. Nothing wrong with that. A lot of them are, any president's a major part of U.S. history. We want to hear from them, good, bad, or indifferent. But should taxpayers still be on the hook? And how much do we actually contribute to former presidents? Now, there aren't a lot of them around, and they do eventually die off. President Carter passing away not in the too far past. But talking about this is National Taxpayers Union Foundation VP of Research, Damian Brady, who's here to chat about that. Hey, Damian, it's Paul here. Thanks for coming back on the show. We appreciate it. How are you?
I'm very good. It's great to be back on, and great to have at least my voice up in Connecticut. I grew up there in Stamford back in the day.
Oh, wow. So you're a Fairfield County guy. Very nice, Damian. I didn't know that. All right. So so you know who we're talking to. So Damian, you know, I'm sure maybe you and the folks at the union have maybe been accused of being heartless about this or whatever. But, you know, the job of a former president is, in fact, sometimes a job, and they make a lot of money here. But yet, what are the taxpayers footing the bill here for?
Yeah, this is a policy that goes back to the 1950s. You know, the idea behind it is that there are still some obligations of the office of the White House that linger on among a president after they leave the White House. So they set up funding to provide for an office and staff for them. Mm-hmm. You know, and you got to remember the origin of this was at the time Harry Truman had just left the office, and he was thought to be down on his luck, you know, financially having a hard time. So they passed. That was one of the reasons that they argued that we need this bill to protect the dignity of presidents after they leave the office.
Sure.
You know, but nowadays, as you noted, you know, presidents have so many ways to make millions of dollars. They get paid, you know, huge payday every time that they do a speech. Book deals, like Biden just had a $10 million book deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's time to look at these perks and see, you know, what we can do to save taxpayers' dollars, because we're spending about $5 million a year on this. And so this is money that includes a pension. Some members are eligible. Some former presidents are eligible for some health benefits, mm-hmm. Depending on how long they were in the government. And then office space, salaries for personnel that they hire in their office, money for communications, printing, supplies, subscriptions to newspapers and things like that.
Wow.
You know, things that the office needs. So, you know, they're extremely wealthy. You know, maybe there's some public need for them to get some money.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're getting some very generous pension. But it's time to take a look at this. So there is a reform bill in the Senate that would pare this back and put some caps on it.
Yeah, I see. It was introduced by Joni Ernst, Iowa Republican. The Presidential Allowance Modernization Act would cap pensions, limit the expenses, as you say, and cut perks for wealthy ex-presidents to save taxpayers millions. And have you gotten any pushback on this, Damian, by talking about this? Does this bill have any shot at all? Or is it going to be looked at as being heartless here?
Well, I don't think anybody sees it as heartless. And if you look back to 2016, The House and the Senate passed an earlier version of this bill.
Huh.
And it was sent to President Obama. And just 3 months before he was set to leave the White House, he vetoed it. It was going to cut off the benefits he was about to get. So it has passed before.
Hmm.
You know, we just had a big tax reform bill passed into law. So now the focus here in Washington, D.C. has to be about tackling our national debt. And this is a small way of doing that. And you work on these smaller things that helps build momentum and progress towards tackling some of the bigger fiscal challenges that remain. So
yeah.
If you put this bill on Trump's desk, I think he would sign it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I see some of the, and again, no fault of these men. I mean, they have a legacy. They're offered book deals, speaking deals. Yeah, nobody's forcing people to pay these people. Bill Clinton's net worth, $120 million. Mr. Obama, Barack Obama, $70 million, George W. Bush, $40 million, and even Joe Biden, who did not have all that much money, he made a point of telling us that he's worth $10 million here. I get it, Damian. I understand it. And I guess people, do they not think these men, and probably soon to be women at one time or another, do they not think they're worth this amount of money?
We have to think about the taxpayers' obligation here. These are very wealthy people. You know, maybe we could provide an office to continue some of their presidential obligations, mm-hmm. but for a short period of time. It doesn't need to be, you know, for the rest of their lifetime. Mm-hmm. How long? We can come up with a reasonable time for that. And also, there's absolutely no limit on how big their office can be and where it can be located. According to the latest budget data, Joe Biden's office next year is going to cost over $700,000. I believe it's somewhere in the Navy Yard, unless he's planning on moving it. You know, other former presidents have offices in very expensive locations as well. So, you know, we could put some limits on this. They usually like to locate them where they have their personal foundations set up, so that way they can help commingle some funding there and some staffers, which is, you know, it's another problem as well.
All right. Damian Brady joins us. Damian, thank you. We appreciate that. How can folks find out more about what your organization is doing? What's the National Taxpayers Union Foundation all about?
Yeah, you can find us at ntu.org/foundation. We're the research arm for the National Taxpayers Union. And we have a great team working on behalf of taxpayers here in Washington, D.C. and around the country.
All right, ntu.org. Damian Brady. Damian, thanks. Good to have a fellow Fairfield County person on. We appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. Have a great night.
Appreciate it. There you go.